the landlord. The Brodkin's father was senile when he died. Blessed deliverance. At the time of their father's last illness, Loey had three different, August had two different, and Slib had one different affairs with women going.
Get that woman home, she's drunk!
Her father roared from his deathbed through the corridor. Loey only laughed and continued to dance. Such a voice didn't frighten him. It came to him like a squeak, as it always had. August, or August, or August, transmigrated Russian in his father's house, took its dates to drive-ins. If they didn't want to go all the way, he pulled up and lit them out, and was never heard of again. He lived far from his father. He boarded at Chukchis, and by letter announced to his brothers, "Come on out! The water's fine! I've found a place! Go west, young man!" And so they did. However, he couldn't or wouldn't pass his examinations, nor would he take his father's money. Withdrew into the army, and after a fist fight, was hanged by a court-martial. When his father wanted to see him, August cried, "Tell father that I am not a vile dog." Loey was the oldest. The other brothers usually followed his lead. But they always stayed close together, like a bundle of faggots. They warmed each other. They hadn't had a father in a long time. They looked to Loey. Oh, they were merry lads and were always telling fantastic stories on themselves and their friends. You would have laughed if you could hear them. In this case, August led, and the other brothers followed. They wrote to their father, "We're out west now, at college, it's fun." But they knew he could not read and would not know where they were. He was a furnace tender, but he grew senile when they were four. They had little or no money, but took nothing from him. They enjoyed life, took care of each other, lent each other any amount without a word, and always seemed cast under a good spell, watched by a good fairy who cast them into a charm circle. One day they met Chukchis, shivering in the sub, rubbing his hands together, and began to muse him with stories. They told stories on themselves and stories on him. Soon he began to laugh, hold his sides, turn round, and see himself in a totally new way. He had never realized how funny his life was, how full of little adventures, complete in themselves, but expand a little, till he met his new friends. Oh, how gay it was. He decided to throw in his fortune with theirs, and since they were looking for a boarding house, he decided to join them, found them a place with a pool and a red roof, arranged with the landlord, and became the instrument of their good fortune. "Move in with us," cried the Brodkins, opening beers, and Chukchis squeaked back, "I have, I'm right down the hall." Their new landlord treated them to many a meal of distrust, suspicion, and this bothered them not in the least. They clapped their hands on Chukchis' back and called him a merry man. Chukchis put off paying his rent as long as he could, put off getting work as well, and so fending for himself. He did not like the idea. He liked to lay in bed all day. He was so chilly, so warm-blooded. To crawl out of bed was to feel sick and dizzy. There was always a great deal to do in bed. He pressed his nose to the inside of the frosted window, where it wasn't so cold, or drew faces of scarecrows and creatures he saw in the plaster shapes of his ceiling. He enjoyed pulling the covers over his head, snuggling down, all comfy, so toasty in bed. Besides, there wasn't much room to move around in his room. The big table stood right in the middle, loaded down with books. Still, to continue to live here, standing upright without trembling, Chukchis would have to find work. Already the landlord, with finger and thumb, grasped a long nostril hair, plucked it out after a second hard tug, and sneezed lustily. The of well-being rounding out the explosion. Chukchis could hear this like a challenge from the basement. "Boom, boom, boom," said the china closet as he passed by. Chukchis surveyed the living room and at the same instant hurried to tidy it up. A last drop of Slim's punch glistened in its beautiful bowl. Loey's partner had crooked a lipstick-stained cigarette butt in her saucer. Chukchis himself had twisted into all kinds of weird shapes, half a dozen paper napkins. August had quenched a messy cigar in an uneaten bunchlet of grapes. A good deal of the day, Chukchis spent sitting and reading in the sick boarder's quarters at the other end of the house. When she was attended by a nurse, Nettie Butler, who kept pacing boom, boom, boom through the dining room, it made him so nervous he fled the house, wouldn't speak to the boarder for a week. But then, when he could stand it no longer, lamely, sadly, with a soft smile, after Nettie was gone, crept back up to visit her. They talked and laughed for over an hour. Over this soft boarder's bed, I remember a Christ on the cross that perhaps wasn't there at all. She was as soft, as weak, as terrified of every move, of every quick gesture, as Chukchis. That's why they got along extra well for a while. They chirped and quacked like ducks in water. He read to her from Gide's journals or whatnot, and she fell asleep in a twinkling when he held her hand. But when the landlord visited the nice boarder at evening with his boom, boom, boom through the dining room, Chukchis had to leap out the window and hang onto the trellis until he left. One time he leaped on the roof, then down onto the soft, wet ground, wet after a soft rain, decided he could stand no more. He would get a room of his own, separate himself entirely from what was filling his heart with needles, make some headway toward a life of his own. He spent his last $6 on a nice room by St. Mary's, where he'd gone to sleep as a boy, slept between sheets all week, worked at night on things that gave him joy, and spent a very pleasant week. But when the week was over, he crept backwards and downwards to his little room under the landlord's. The boarder, pinched and purple, but looking very soft, smiling shyly, propped in pillows, called him. She was all alone, and his heart overflowed. He sat down by her side and decided never to leave her. He found a rosary, and they said it together. "It wasn't your fate," was her lame consolation when he told her his efforts, a week away, weekly. "It wasn't your fate," was her tender refrain.